Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are you troubled by stale podcasts in the middle of the night?
Do you love films that feature the busting of spooks, specters, or ghosts?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute.
Ghostbusters Resurrection is an RPG audio drama combining tabletop gaming and cinematic paranormal elimination adventures.
Call the professionals at nerdyshow.com/ghostbusters.
We're ready to believe you.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the borough of Queens, in the city of New York, this is the Epic Podcast with your hosts, Nelson Lugo and Schaefer, the Dark Lord.
Hello, loyal listener. This is episode 61 of the Epic Podcast, recorded in the beautiful and spacious Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens. I am your host, the plucky yet ethnic Nelson Lugo.
And I saw a meme today that I want to tell you about.
A meme?
Yeah, it's one of those memes where it has a question in it that tells you a thing about you based on, like, you know, those ones that are like, if you're a Scorpio, you drive this way. If you were born in this year, this is your favorite flavor of berry.
Okay.
Right? This meme said, the song that was number one on the day of your 14th birthday defines your life.
Oh, shit. Accurate is it?
The number one song on your 14th birthday.
Oh, shit.
Was With or Without You by U2. You can't live with or without me.
That is probably the truest statement.
No, that's not.
Oh.
The number one song on my 14th birthday was Bad Medicine by Bon Jovi. And I am your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
That's because you're half drugs. Hello, Schaefer. How are you? It's been a while.
I mean, I saw you a few days ago.
That's true. It's been a while since the last time we were in a movie theater together.
Since we allowed C. Muldrow et al. to peep their ears in on our hangs. These are hangs. We're having hangs.
We're having hangs?
Yeah.
Never say that again in my presence. Don't.
If you want to attract a younger demographic, you need to, you know, kick up some of your slang. Make
really?
It a little more modern, yeah.
Okay, so we hit me again. Hangs? These are hangs?
It's, no. You said what it too many times.
What are the youths saying? What's the hip slang that the kids are doing these days?
Oh my God. You sound like that dad, that suburban dad who is trying to make a last-ditch effort to steer his teenage kid's life in the right direction.
I'm hip. I'm with it. I'm down with the OPP.
I have seen you recently.
Uh-huh.
We've been to the movies several times.
We have, actually.
This is a wonderful time to be alive.
Is it?
It is. Well, it's the beginning of summer movie season, and that's always a very happy time for anticipation, and then usually pays off in just exhaustion of CGI explosions by the end of summer.
That's true, also.
You're like, how many goddamn Avengers are there?
How many times can they blow up New York City in one summer?
Not enough for me. I will never grow tired. I'm going to grow tired of superheroes and origin stories and team-ups and giant CGI apocalypse battles to the death with whatever alien warlord has come to destroy Earth that some plucky upstart's going to, like, save at the last second. I will grow fatigued with that. I will never grow tired of disaster porn on the big screen that involves the destruction of New York City. And that's from before I lived here.
Oh, I know.
I love watching New York City crumble in films, even if the CGI is bad. I don't care. Even if a dog jumps into a tunnel at the last second to avoid a fireball.
Did your love of big city disaster porn start with like Independence Day, or did it was like pre-Independence Day?
I mean, I...
Like, did you watch Godzilla films and just like... root for the monster and
yeah.
and like take that building?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wowzers. Okay.
Because it looked really satisfying to destroy all of that. You know what it is? It's because when I was a kid, I watched Fraggle Rock.
Oh yeah.
And
the doozers
were just always toiling away building these nonsense sugar structures that the Fraggles would just come in and be like, fuck your work, and they just like eat it. It felt so, I don't know, powerful. Yet somehow so satisfying to just stomp through something. And
yeah.
But yeah, the first time I recall really being connected to New York City destruction porn was Independence Day. That was
like, I think, well, that was a turning point for like disaster movies.
And then it was like every summer for 10 years, Will Smith and a crumbling cityscape.
Damn you, Will Smith. He is the answer to and the problem of all of my life.
What?
You heard me.
Never heard anybody say something that cruel about Will Smith. That's not even true.
I love Will Smith.
I do too.
Let's get jiggy with it, Schaefer. Let's talk about some movies.
So yeah, I have been to the cinema a number of times this month.
So have I.
I went a couple of times with you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what we've seen.
People
want to know.
Do they?
What we thought of really? The movies that they already saw weeks ago by the time they listened.
Is that really a thing?
No, but...
Tell you what, loyal listener. Do you still want to hear us talk about movies you've already watched? Then shoot us an email at epicpodcast@gmail.com.
That's epicpodcast@gmail.com.
We saw Avengers Infinity War.
We did.
Yes.
We saw Avengers Infinity War.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Yes. No, I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too.
Yeah.
Bad guys won.
I know, I like that.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
You like Empire Strikes Back?
You know I do.
Bad guys win.
Bad guys win. Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert.
Oh. Let me tell you something really quickly as a aside to this. Legendary comedian George Carlin,
mm-hmm.
who... has been a big influence on me since I was too young to listen to his records because my dad gave them to me when I was 8.
That is an all too common story.
He had one of his many live HBO specials scheduled to air in September 2001.
Okay.
They ended up postponing the special because a lot of networks were not really looking for comedy programming in September of 2001.
Right.
And so he postponed it like... to the next year, and he came out and he did some different material. He acknowledged what had happened, but he changed the title of the show. The title of the show ended up being Complaints and Grievances.
Okay.
The original title of the show.
Oh, no.
That was going to air live in September of 2001 was...
Oh, dear.
I Kinda Like It When a Lot of People Die.
Oh, my God.
Which is also a more fitting subtitle for Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, no lie. That's,
I kind of liked it.
I kind of liked it, yeah.
And a lot of people died. Spoiler.
Part two.
Anyway.
You saw Deadpool. I have not.
I saw Deadpool part two.
So don't spoil it for me because I still want to go see it.
Dick jokes.
Really? There's a dick joke in a Deadpool movie?
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
I liked Deadpool too. I loved the first Deadpool.
Yeah.
I really liked the second Deadpool.
Oh, you didn't love it?
I mean, the sequels are challenges.
Okay. I'm going to take that as a no, you didn't
love it. That franchise already has an uphill battle. One being that I never gave a shit about Deadpool as a comic book character.
That's also
true.
I
only liked that movie with Ryan Reynolds playing him. Mm-hmm. That's the only time I've ever given a shit about Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a diamond on its own. A rare gem, if you will. So
okay.
A sequel to it is going to be kind of difficult. And I liked it a lot.
Oh,
I would definitely see it again. I can't wait to see it again.
Awesome.
Deadpool 2. Starring Domino.
Okay. We saw Solo, a Star Wars movie.
We did. That was the last time I saw you in person. We saw Solo, a Star Wars story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I didn't really like it very much.
Why do you hate Star Wars?
Wow.
Seriously.
That was our two-man show called The Internet.
Show me on this doll where Star Wars hurt you.
I did write a very diplomatic post about how I didn't like
it. I did read that. And that was the single most forward-thinking, genteel post I think I've ever read from you.
I am such a Star Wars apologist, and I read like in a comment thread on somebody else's status they were talking about Star Wars, and somebody chimed in and said, like, Schaefer hated it. I was like, my fandom of Star Wars is worthy of quoting. I didn't hate it.
It was okay for
you. It was okay. It didn't really...
It was okay.
Yeah.
It didn't... It ticked the boxes, but it just didn't float your boat.
I had some fun. It was all right.
All right.
You want to know what the best movie is, though, I saw in the last month?
What?
It was a 10-hour movie.
Oh, shit.
No, 5-hour movie.
Oh, shit.
Called Cobra Kai on YouTube.
Wait. Hold on. We were discussing this off mic.
Were we?
And you told me that it was the most fan servicey thing to be all fan servicey things.
Oh.
And that you were just like, it's okay.
It is fucking nostalgia porn.
Yeah.
Straight up. It's just constant nods to, hey, middle-aged dude, did you like Karate Kid? I know you did, because here's countless references to what happened in that movie.
Oh, God. Do they reference any of the other movies? Like when Daniel-san goes to Japan or Osaka?
The opening scene of Karate Kid 2 is played in a flashback. And then they're like, fuck you, Karate Kid 3.
Really?
And fuck you, Hillary Swank, too. Apparently. There's no
Hillary Swank references?
No. Look, that's not the point. The point is, it really is only there to serve by throwing a ton of nods to a thing that you like that isn't even very good. It's just like a big casserole of acknowledgments of the thing that you loved. And it's cheesy, and it's ham-fisted, and it's hella problematic at times.
So it's a Star Wars movie?
Yeah. And I loved it more than I thought I was going. I'm embarrassed by how much I liked Cobra Kai.
Huh.
It's like insulting.
Huh.
In what it is.
And
I still found it really
I'm genuinely
charming.
Shocked to hear you say that.
I like the...
Because you were very tepid on it when you first told me about it.
I'm quite proud of the moral ambiguity that they have injected into our beloved hero and his arch villain, Johnny Lawrence. Strike first, strike hard, no mercy, sir.
Is the body bag kid in this?
He's not, but he's got an analog. It's like every one of these reboots of like the past 20 years where they bring back these old aging actors
right.
to talk like in their gravelly voices about what it was like in their day in the
sure.
80s, man.
Sure.
And then there's like a new generation of like younger kids to like, you know, take
right.
on the mantle. And they've all got analogs. Like there is like that kid, the get him a body bag. That kid, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah,
Bobby was his name.
That's the guy. Yeah,
he's got an analog in a younger kid in it. They all
right.
do. Yeah, it's worth it for what you watch it for Aisha. And if anybody's watched Cobra Kai, you know what I'm talking about. But Aisha's just the best.
Okay, I'm gonna have to give this a watch.
She's a bullied kid.
Wait, so did
she
you...
joins the dojo? She gets revenge.
So. Wait, so did you subscribe to YouTube Red in order to get the whole thing?
I got the free 30-day trial, and I have a reminder set on my phone to cancel it before it starts charging me so that I can watch it a couple more times.
Well, fuck, I think I already did my 30-day free trial.
You know what? Fuck Daniel LaRusso.
Oh, my God. Wow, that escalated quickly, my
Sorry,
friend.
Just, I thought I knew who the hero and the villain was, but maybe I didn't 30 years later. Can't believe I just talked more about a YouTube series than I cared to talk about Star Wars.
I know, and you got me wanting to watch a fucking YouTube series. That's weird.
You're an old man. It's made for you.
I'm young, middle-aged.
I saw you use that phrase online today.
I like the accusatory finger you pointed at me while you said that.
It's like saying I'm only partially on fire.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's enough of summer movies. Boop-a-doop-boop-a-doop-boop. So what are we doing next, Schaefer?
Who cares? This is already tedious and tiresome, and I'm already over
You
it.
Think everything we do is tedious and tiresome.
Because I'm smart. I have ears. I know what this sounds like.
I mean, I hear you, but Really?
I really don't think we need to. This is what I think. I think we don't need to chew up any more of the runtime of episode 61.
No.
Because it's just going to be more of this nonsense. Hey, Lugo, what are you doing? Working on your show about death? Yeah. Schaefer, what are you doing? Working on another record about death? Yeah. How's that coming along? Well, I'm wrote another song.
Wait, you're writing another album about
Shut
death?
Shut up! Anyway, but that's all boring and who cares. What's exciting is that we have a very, very exciting guest. And we haven't had a guest in months.
No, that's true.
Because we have burned all of our bridges.
Nobody likes us anymore.
I don't even know who to ask to come on the show because I just assume nobody likes us anymore. But we have a really exciting guest this month. And I don't really want to waste any more time talking about your one-man show or talking about my one-man shame spiral. So I feel like,
well, don't keep me in suspense. Who is it?
If you were a listener of this show, you would already know based on the title,
right?
And you know who the guest is because the guest
oh my god, you're breaking the fucking fourth wall. Is there a fourth wall in radio? I guess there is. It's more of a theatrical concept than a direction, isn't it?
Did you go to a performance art high school?
No. No, I mean, yes, kind of.
I think we should just bring out our guest.
Okay.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment.
I know exactly what you want. I know exactly what you need. I know exactly where you're from. I know exactly what you mean. Why? Because I'm a psych major and I'm a mind-reading machine. Woo! Some people ask me what I do. Where I work. They ask me where I went to school. Sometimes they ask me with a smirk. And when I tell them that I went to UC Berkeley and I majored in psychology, they turn into jerks because they don't think that I can tell. Their condescending tone of voice. They think they're doing so well. They think I made a bad choice. What they know is that I analyze their actions and I plan my interaction for the sake of satisfaction and voice. I know exactly what you want. I know exactly what you need. I know exactly where you're from. I know exactly what you mean. Why? Because I'm a psych major and I'm a mind-reading machine. Woo! I know I'm naturally smart, but lack the talent of Descartes. See, I'm the master of the heart. I have a Bachelor of Arts. I know my models of attachment and the causes of attraction. I could even break it down to its parts. But I can see you're not impressed by the degree that I possess. And based on how you use success, why you might think it's useless. What you don't know is that I see your inhibitions and your deepest superstitions, all the broken dreams you're keeping repressed. I know exactly what you want. I know exactly what you need. I know exactly where you're from. I know exactly what you mean. Why? Because I'm a psych major and I'm a mind-reading machine. Woo! From the heart. I know exactly what you want. I know exactly what you need. I know exactly where you're from. I know exactly what you mean. Why? Because I'm a psych major and I'm a mind-reading machine. Woo! I know exactly what you want. Exactly what.
Did you know that the Epic Podcast is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network? And did you know that the Nerdy Show Podcast Network is home to dozens of other programs that are also surely relevant to your nerdy interests? Oh, it's true. It's damn true. Swing by nerdyshow.com and see what treasures await you. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. At patreon.com/nerdyshow, you can fund the entire Nerdy Show Network and unlock a plethora of amazing bonus content and early releases. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and the Epic Podcast on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Our guest on the program this month is a nerdcore rapper from Oakland, California. Her debut album, Raging Ego, just dropped yesterday. Please welcome to the program, Lex, the Lexicon Artist.
Hooray!
Yo! Clap, 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 clap. Oh my God.
The studio audience goes wild.
What's up?
Welcome to Studio 6C.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. Yeah, this is awesome.
Lex, I have known you for a short amount of time. I met you this year in person for the first time at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. I'd heard your stuff online before among the nerdcore friends that I have online. Links with this name with a bunch of Lex in it kept popping up a lot. And I remember finally checking some stuff out and being like, oh shit, this new rapper is fire. And then I met you just months ago when you went to Austin and also burned all of those venues to the ground.
Fuck yeah. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
How long have you been doing it?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
And you're just now starting to take this act on the road and take it like out of town.
Yeah.
Out of the Bay.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. So I started in June or July. I can't really remember. But yeah, I started writing in June, started performing in July of 2016. So it's been about 2 years at this point that I've been pursuing this project. Now, I've been playing music all my life. You know, I'm classically trained as a pianist and a violinist. I started playing music when I was 4 years old, like really got into it when I was eight. But really doing this project has just been a 2 year kind of thing. And the first year was really just establishing my local fan base. But really, I think what kind of took this on an upward trajectory on this kind of like exponential growth was being at South by Southwest, where I met everyone. And at this point, I have connections in, you know, all sorts of different cities, including New York City, Austin, Texas, Dallas, Texas, you know, a variety of different places that I otherwise would have never gone to, at least, you know, for performance purposes. And yeah, now I'm starting to take it on the road, which is really cool.
Well, what got you started? Like what... Well, I guess it's a two-part question. What was the music you were playing prior to this? And then what was the impetus to get started into doing hip-hop?
Yeah, sure. So I can start at the beginning. So apparently my mom told me this year when I went back home for Chinese New Year. So I'm from Taipei, Taiwan. And so I went home to Taipei in February. And then I picked out, I looked at this photo album and there was this photo of me like wearing these like Dorothy like red glass slippers playing piano. And I was 4 years old. And my mom was like, you know, when you were a kid, I remember your piano teacher telling me that you had perfect pitch when you were 4 years old. And I did not know this until I started playing bass in like eighth grade that I had that. But, you know, I think I've always just had a penchant for music. I picked up the violin when I was 8 years old. That's like, you know, kind of my main instrument and was for a while. You know, like any good Asian kid, I was, you know, playing the violin. I was second violin in the Taipei Philharmonic Orchestra.
Oh, wow.
Which was really cool.
God.
And I just, you know, I just played violin. It wasn't something that I really loved, which is kind of a shame because I didn't realize how good I was at music when I was playing violin. And it was really until, not until I, you know, kind of put violin to the side, which, you know, I don't know how happy my mom was about that. They were paying a lot for lessons.
Sure.
I honestly took a lot from it, you know, like, you know, building music fundamentals and things like that.
Sure.
But, you know, I know that they wanted to cultivate this like interest in music and like this hobby in me. But it wasn't until I kind of like put it down on the wayside and started pursuing music that really I felt spoke to me and like, you know, moved me in my emotions that I started finding this like love of music. So I got into hip hop when I was 12 years old, approximately, or like nice. 9 or 10. So two of the most influential albums for me were like Meteora by Linkin Park.
Sure.
And The Eminem Show by Eminem.
yeah. Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I remember listening to it on my Walkman because it was so dirty and I was just listening to it all the time. I was like 9 years old and I was like, yeah, you know, listening to Superman by Eminem. He's like, you know, all like sexual and shit. I'm just like, yeah, fuck, this is edgy. And, you know, that kind of got ingrained into my head a little bit. I listened to like, you know, 50 Cent, Dr. Dre, you know, all sorts of early Kanye, you know. And it's like rhyme patterns just like started to ingrain themselves into my head. And then I joined this hip hop club in middle school, where I walked into the hip hop club and there was no one there but the facilitating teacher. And I was like, am I the only person at the school who is interested in hip hop? I feel so embarrassed and I don't know if I can actually be a rapper now. That was when I was 12 years old.
Wow.
And I had that experience.
Yeah.
But then in eighth grade, my English teacher assigned this rap project to my entire class saying, hey, you know, let's write a rap song. Here's how to write a rap song. Find a random beat on YouTube and like record your vocals to it and submit it to me for your final project. And wow. I was like, okay, this is like finally my time to shine. And I wrote something. It was about how hard I studied and how much of a life I didn't have, which is very, very nerdcore. My first song ever. And I submitted it to my teacher and then he responded to me. Well, he like looked me in the eye and he was like, Lex or Alex, Alex, this is really good. You should do this more. And that has like never left my mind, basically. And from then, I always had this dream of like, oh, I wanted to be a rapper.
Sure.
For a while, I was involved in like competitive beatboxing. I used to be part of this like beatbox battle scene where people would just be like, and like get
Wait,
on stage.
Sorry,
yeah, yeah. Hold on. All right,
you're
yeah,
burying
yeah.
the fucking lead.
Okay. Okay. I didn't
so
know.
So many questions.
I was hoping we were going to get to talk about this.
Okay.
I learned about this.
Well, first of all, what the fuck is competitive beatboxing?
What the fuck is that question? It's exactly what it sounds like.
How do you win?
It's in battles.
It's like rap battles, but you use like.
Does the audience vote? Like, I don't understand. Like, how do you determine a winner?
There's a jury, usually.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
a jury of how many people?
Five.
Holy shit! So there's five people.
Yeah.
And each of them, is each of them vote like the Olympics? Like they each vote, and whatever the total score is, or do they have to like be unanimous about? No, Lex won this one, or.
I kind of forgot. I think it's just they vote for who had a stronger round. So usually it goes like, you know, first guy does like a 1 minute and 30 second set.
Sure.
And then second guy does like a response set. And then there's, you know, another round where like, you know, first guy does another 1 minute and 30 second set. And then the other guy responds. And then it's like, oh, who did better in the first round? Who did better in the second round?
Got it.
And then they vote on who was, you know, who like overall had like the most rounds. And I think it's just each judge kind of, you know, gives their opinion on who overall had the stronger sets.
Uh-huh.
And then they vote, and then there's, you know, obviously it's five people, and so there's always kind of this there's always a result, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah,
there's never a need for a
no
tie
there's
breaker.
Never a tie. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And so
how
did I get into that? Good question. The internet. That's how I get into everything. Yeah. So I had no friends in middle school, like zero at all.
Sure. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, exactly. Like both of you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. very proud of that. I spent a lot of time on the internet and I joined this community called humanbeatbox.com. And at that time, it was very like UK focused and Europe focused.
Okay.
And it was a community of beatboxers just like learning from each other, learning like, you know, new sounds, new skills, you know, battle tactics and things like that. And they would put together things like, you know, back in the day, like conventions like BoxCon or, you know, this is still going on, like Beatbox Battle World Championships, where people get together like in a club
BoxCon?
And they just. Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just. And they network, and they like, it's exactly like how nerdcore rappers do it, actually.
Okay.
And the nerdcore family feels very close to like what I experienced with Human Beatbox, except I never got to meet the people at Human Beatbox. It was always like digital communication. That's why I have like 110 words per minute typing speed, because I spent so much time talking to people on the internet. And I met a whole bunch of people. At that time, I was like, you know, 14, 15, 16. So I never got to like fly out to compete in these battles. Right. So I always did local battles in Taipei. But, you know, part of me wishes that I had the opportunity to, like, you know, fly out to these battles. I was also 16, so I was underage. I couldn't go to, like, the clubs. Yeah. So, you know, that was just kind of it. It was fun for a while, but I, you know, I don't know. You guys can ask more questions about it. By the way,
Was there any kind of forum for like a online competition where you all would submit videos or
streams? Totally. Yeah. So
did you tear those up?
You know, I was one of the few female beatboxers at the time, and so at the time I was pretty good for like women, and people were like fairly impressed, but I've never been the kind of person to like learn a whole bunch of really like complicated sounds that a lot of people are like, oh, that's so technical, that's so cool, you know. I was always more focused on, I guess, musicality and rhythm and things like that. So, you know, I'm a very like rhythmic person.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, considering your musical background.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I was never that great at kind of expanding my sound repertoire. And so my techniques kind of like fell to the wayside as more and more like, you know, beatboxers kind of came out of the woodwork as time went on, and like, you
start
know,
with like the ones who would like do the samples, like impressions,
like vastly kind of like overtaking my speed. And that's when I realized that, oh, you know, like maybe this isn't for me.
And that's when you found nerdcore.
Yeah, pretty much. There was a little bit of a gap. I went to college first, you know. I like, you know, did my school thing, studied psychology, you know, did acapella. I was like the vocal percussionist in my acapella group,
of course,
because I still wanted to like keep that like, you know, beatboxing thing alive. But at some point after I graduated college, I was just like, oh, you know, I worked a job, I worked two jobs in like the marketing and like sales industries and like tech. There's plenty of those in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I did that for 2 years, and then I was like, you know what, I'm gonna be a rapper now. So entire musical trajectory right there.
Wow.
Wait, so I guess, did you just stumble into nerdcore, or like what was your gateway into that? Was
it's another great question. And I gotta be honest with you, I don't really know how. I just
nobody really knows how.
Yeah, exactly. So let me tell you the story if you guys are down
it's
here.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like when you discover that your apartment has black mold. You're like, you didn't see it forming, just one day you have black mold and you're like, I have to move. That's what joining the nerdcore community is like.
Accurate.
One day you're just there because you had to move.
So what's it, how did you get into it?
So when I was looking for a scene to join when I first started this you know, rap project, I looked around, and I think I had it somewhere in my head that like this floating cloud of like nerdcore hip hop. That this thing existed within like the realm of
but
my
you weren't
consciousness.
Sure.
I wasn't sure if it existed, but I was like, I think there's a thing called nerdcore hip hop, and I think that there are people that exist named Schaefer the Dark Lord and MC Lars, and I'm not entirely sure if this is true, but I think it's a thing.
You had a fever dream once, and these are just nightmare
just
monsters.
Made it manifest.
So wait, so the rap project came before you even knew there was such a subculture as nerdcore?
I think it was concurrent, but again, I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
And so I was like, nerdcore hip hop, does a Facebook group exist for this page? The answer is yes.
Yes.
I would imagine there's a lot.
Yes. Yeah. The answer is yes. There's just one.
There's only one?
Well, there's one main one where everyone is.
Sure.
I can only assume that the first day that you showed up in that group, you were introduced to all these people, and they were all really mad at one other person. Because that's...
That's literally every day on that group. Yes.
Love y'all.
Yeah. So when I joined the group, Beaker trolled the shit out of me, which is what he does.
Yeah.
A bunch of people trolled the shit out of me because when you're a new member and you're like, hey, listen to my shit, people troll the shit out of you. Yeah. And I just had to get used to that. I was like, oh shit, these people are kind of scary. And like, I kind of backed off a little bit, but then I came back with a new song. And at that point, I think people were like starting to warm up to me.
Sure.
And then LaRon Gray, oh my, reached out to me from the Facebook group Bars. Shout out to LaRon. You're cool. And he was like, hey, do you want to be the vocalist to my producer for the VPC 5? And I was like,
do you know
sure.
Do you know what the VPC is, Lugo?
No.
Lex, if you will.
Okay. The VPC is Vocalist Producer Challenge. It's not happening this year, but it happened like the last 5 years.
Okay.
Whitney and a couple other people from the nerdcore community kind of, you know, put together this competition where, you know, a vocalist pairs up with a producer and then you're given these challenges every 3 weeks. Of like what kind of song to write. So in the past,
This is ringing a bell now.
Yeah. In the past, there have been like, you know, oh, write a radio jingle, and an advertisement, or you know, write a song without using first person, or you know, write a song based on you know a fandom.
And so someone roped you into doing this.
Yes. So someone roped me into doing this, and I wasn't sure if I had the time to do it, but I was actually just kidding myself. I totally had the time to do it, and. I was just making excuses
that
for
was
myself.
Like, that was like an early simulator for the future where you have to start turning down guest verses all the time. People are like, oh, Lex, I love your stuff. I'm working on this new joint here and I'd love to get you on it. Yeah, you know, I got like, I don't know if I have time for it right now. I'd love to work with you sometime. There's just a lot going on.
Welcome to the Shape of the Dark Lord How to Be a Nerdcore Rapper Correspondence Course, Lesson 1.
If you're listening to this and I've ever said that to you in a verse request, know that that yours was an exception that was sincere. Anyway.
Yeah, same here to whoever is listening.
Right.
Where was I?
So the VPC challenge, you were like, you didn't know if you were gonna have time for it, and you're like,
but I totally do. And I was like, I'm gonna do it because I want people to peep game. And we made 5 songs and we got like 3rd in the overall competition. We came behind Danger Grove and Shubzilla and Clop and Pop. Mm-hmm. Who are 2 like obviously formidable opponent teams.
Yeah.
They're okay.
But people really peeped my game after that. Like, people started, you know, they were, like, voting on the VPC, and, like, everyone was, like, listening to, like, my and Omai's tracks, like, oh, Lex can rap, you know? And, you know, from that point, it was, like, you know, people like Megaran, you know, were really down. They, you know, Megaran reached out to me, and it was like, hey, you know, you're cool. You know, you're great at stuff. I'll introduce you to people. I show up at, like, one of his shows. He introduces me to Lars. I do a show with Lars. I do a show with Megaran, and it's just, like, kind of, like, snowballed there.
Sure.
Right now, like, all of my interactions are not like contained within the Nerdcore group, but I have to say that the Nerdcore Facebook group really like catapulted my like networking experience.
Sure. Yeah.
And I have to attest part of that to like my ability to online network because I spend so much time on the internet that I'm just so good at making friends without even meeting them in person. So that's it.
True.
So yeah, that's how I got into Nerdcore, and you know, it really took like going to South by Southwest to like meet all these people.
You were I don't know if the industry still uses this term, but you would have been was once called a buzz band.
A buzz band?
Yeah. During among the nerdcore community at this year's South by. You did a bunch of shows, and all of the nerdcore people that I see there every year, everybody at every show was talking about Lex the Lexicon Artist. Oh my God, did you see Lex?
Really?
Have you seen Lex? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yeah.
People were talking about you. I'm so honored.
I already had listened to some stuff and thought you were great. And that first show that I saw you perform at, which was, it was one of DJ Rockman's shows.
Yeah.
I don't remember which venue it was.
It was like the small one at Dozen Street on like East 12th Street. Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, I was totally blown away.
Thank
you. You have no business being as good as you are for having done this as not as long as you have.
Oh.
And that's both in your writing and in your performance.
Yeah, so take that.
There are people with a decade of experience on you who like still get on stage and don't really
suck
know.
The air out of the fucking room.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Yeah.
Well,
you know who you are, bad rappers.
We have a bleep. I can use it. I'm not saying.
Oh, I'll start dropping names.
I'll talk shit about lots of people on this podcast, but I'm not going to talk shit about nerdcore rappers.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
I don't owe them anything. They never gave me nothing. I don't give a fuck.
I got a couple of people are still going to give me things, so I'm going to keep it chill.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm a diplomatic motherfucker.
That escalated quickly, and yes, you are.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, now that we got all the music stuff out of the way, let's talk about you, Lex.
Mm?
Let's talk about what's your hopes, your dreams, your deepest.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Deepest desires.
What?
If you would like to take Nelson Lugo's course for the professional interviewer, please send a request to epicpodcast@gmail.com.
Fuck, I don't know where to go from there.
What am I supposed to say to that?
Everything. Go.
I really want to buy a house for my parents.
Aww. That's fucking sweet. God
yeah.
damn it. Shit.
I only spend a lot of money on music things. I don't spend money on anything else except traveling, experiences, and food and music things.
Yeah.
That's it.
You're in New York City right now.
Fuck yeah.
We waited until we were able to be treated by you crossing four time zones so that we could interview you in person. How is this trip to New York City?
It is actually inspiring my next record, so I would say it's really good.
Your record dropped yesterday.
I know.
That's the spirit. That is.
I kind of feel good that I'm
slow
not.
Slow your roll, Lex!
That I'm not resting on my laurels after releasing the first album.
Nor
and
should
I shouldn't, but.
There's laurels and then there's yesterday.
Yeah, you should do what Schaefer does and wait 5 years.
I don't wait 5 years. Damien waits 5 years.
Oh.
Sick burn.
Oh, shots fired.
Shit,
oh, my God.
Shit. He's one of my last friends.
The ball's in your court, Frontalot.
Thank goodness he'll never listen
he'll
to this.
He'll never listen to this.
Oh, he won't?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, okay.
No. We have two listeners.
Okay.
You might be one of them.
Hey, I mean, first of all, yes, I am. Second of all, there's one guy who discovered Michael Kill from your podcast, and he's going to listen to this podcast and discover me, even though he's already my fan. So he's a listener, for sure.
Shout out to that guy.
Yeah, David. Shout out to you.
Shout out, David.
Oh, listener number six has
While we're at it, shout out to Michael Kill.
Yeah, shout out to Michael Kill.
Yeah, he's a cool dude.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, if you like really sad Southern people.
So this is the thing. You at least in one particular song of yours, which is literally titled Artist Anthem.
Yeah.
You do kind of talk about the sort of inherent masochism of being an artist.
Uh-huh.
Of pouring your stuff out, giving it to a public, and spending your time just kind of like breaking yourself to make things.
Yeah, and I do it all with a smile.
Yeah, yes you do. It is absolutely consistent with that and with many of the other like musicians who I know that you will pour all of your sleepless nights and all of your conscious energy into getting a project out.
Uh-huh.
And then as soon as it's out of your hands.
Yeah.
You just want to start climbing the hill again.
All right, so let me tell you something. The thing dropped yesterday, and I'm really proud of it. I'm super proud of it. I feel like everyone should listen
be.
To it.
Absolutely.
I feel like people deserve to hear what I have to say.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've been sitting on this shit for 2 years. some of these songs I wrote in July of 2016.
Oh, wow.
And so it has been a work in progress, and I've really been sitting on it. I did a lot of the work on it in like the last 3 months when I'm feeling really inspired after South By. I was like writing like a motherfucker. I was like, you know, just recording in the studio all the time, just like rushing to get it done so I could like get it out by the summer. And it finally happened.
So which song on it, so which one is the oldest and which one is the newest?
Okay.
In terms of its writing.
I gotta think about this. Luther is the oldest one. That's the fourth track. It's the industrial, super heavy one. It was written from like my raging anger at like someone who I'll not mention. And it's like all sincere.
Was their name Luther?
Nah. Oh. The song is like a Superman reference. It's you get it, but it's like it's me rapping from the perspective of Lex Luthor.
It's a brutal song.
Thank you.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody, neither in a rap song or just even in conversation, ever use the phrase "fuck you with my kryptonite."
Yeah. It's like ridiculous and brutal at the same time. And I don't know, like I always bring like the element of ridiculousness in like my writing.
Sure.
And the element of ridiculousness in, you know, a performance as well.
How very nerd curl over you.
Luther is the oldest, then. Luther's the oldest. Which is the one that's been written most recently?
I think it's Curse of Creativity. Yeah, I think it's actually Curse of Creativity that is the newest one. And it was like, I recorded Curse of Creativity and Psych Major in the same session that I remember. But Curse of Creativity is probably the most recent one that I wrote. And that was the last one that I wrote. I was like, okay, we wrap this up.
Right.
It's done. Yeah. Yeah. So Curse of Creativity is the newest written one. And you can kind of see like the shift of like, you know, my content from like 2 years ago to like now. I think I've improved in my writing.
Hope so.
Yeah. That being said, I think there's still like kind of a similar element to it. They're very different songs, but,
sure, but
you know, it makes sense to kind of, you know, wrap them up in this like, you know, overall package of Raging Ego.
There is a consistent feeling throughout all of the songs on the record, which is a great feat for a bunch of songs that were written over a period of time.
And were written as individual songs.
I know we have a lot of peers who, and I cannot relate to this, but we have a number of peers who will book studio time and will have a bunch of tracks and will go and write in the studio. And they will sit down and say, I am writing this record.
What?
Oh.
I have X number of beats. I am now writing all of these songs. And they kind of write them in a batch as though they are the end game is that this is part of a record. And I think that's great that people can do that. I can't.
Yeah.
I always just like, you know, noodle around with a song because I have an idea, and then when I have like a bunch of songs and I'm like, okay, now I have to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And that's especially with the earlier ones, and you know, your first one, it seems like that's kind of it. You were writing about songs like as you were finding inspiration for them. You weren't like, oh, I just wrote track 5 on Raging Ego today.
Yeah.
No.
So I mean, I guess it's been a 2 year process for you. And I can imagine a lot of that was like stop and starts and like, you know, moments of like intense creativity with moments of breaks in between. Were you planning an album, or were these just like you needed to get like, what was there ever an intent for this to be a package at some point, or were you writing just to write?
Both. I definitely wanted to have an album out, and it was only like
even 2 years ago. That was a goal for you.
Yes, that was a goal for me. But you know, I dropped the Lexus More EP before I did anything else. That was in 2017. It includes songs like LEX and Undateable, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but I still do them in my live sets.
Yeah.
But you know, after that, it was like, okay, I want like a full length album now. How do I like construct it? And all of these songs were written as individual songs with like, you know, different producers. There were some like overlapping producers, but I was trying to, you know, also get a diverse sound and like, you know, mix in a whole bunch of different influences, including, you know, my punk rock influences, you know, like industrial things like that. And so, you know, the sound is like very sprawling. Like all of the beats have like, you know, kind of different feel to them in a lot of ways. There were a lot of songs that were going to be on the album that just didn't end up being on the album because I didn't think they were good enough. And, you know, putting this album together, everything only really started coming together after I came out of South By, and I was inspired, and I was okay, I'm gonna write all these songs. I wrote Curse of Creativity, I wrote Psych Major, Mistakes and Peep Game I wrote right before South By. So literally like half of the album was written in the last like 5 months, basically. even though it spanned like 2 years.
Sure.
But it's still though, it's I just find it impressive. I think that like when I hear some of our peers' earlier records, my own included, like if I listen to my first one, if I listen to Lars' first record, it sounds like a bunch of like rappers who haven't found their voice yet, or they don't really know what music works for them or what production works for them or what kind of style that they want to write. And so you can tell that they've like written with a bunch of different people, and they've kind of tried out this with this person, tried out this with this person. And then when you get it, like everything put together, it feels very much like a quilt. It feels like a bunch of sort of disparate pieces that have been like, that are just like stitched together with charm.
Yeah.
And like you're like, so this record, Peep Game is just a fucking banger.
Oh, thank you.
A club banger. And then like Psych Major's kind of got like, with like a garage rock, like doo-wop feel almost to it. And yet those two, they don't feel mismatched. There's something that you're interjecting in throughout everything. It's just the inherent Lexness of it.
Yeah.
they feel like they belong as part of the same collection of songs. And that's just a pretty interesting feat to pull off. Again, you have no business pulling off a feat like that for short of the time as you've been doing this.
How dare you?
You need to shut the fuck up. honestly, that was one thing that I was worried about, is it feeling like a patchwork, it feeling like a quilt. And, you know, in a way, in some ways it does, you know, the production is all different. I'm very glad to hear from you guys that it sounds cohesive.
I'm
very glad that there's that cohesive element to it, and that everything kind of falls under the umbrella of Raging Ego. It's not a concept album, but in another way it is. Like there's a concept of Raging Ego, and everything like falls under that.
And there are a few kind of like emotional beats that make and themes that like recur throughout the album. Even on songs that don't sound anything alike, there'll still be things that kind of come back. This again, and I'm going to reference Artist Anthem again, because this kind of idea of this sort of almost career/emotional masochism the nature of doing this. Uh-huh. I feel like that kind of like that pops its head up like a groundhog in a few songs.
Yeah.
In the middle of like even some of your most raging ego moments, there's still these moments where it kind of gets tempered, where you're like, oh god, why am I doing this? But it's done subtly, and not in a oh god, like self-deprecating, boring, like, self-indulgent kind of way.
That's funny, one of the people who reviewed my album, who just sent me the review today, says that Raging Ego can get just slightly too self-indulgent, which I think is fine, because that was the point.
that's odd criticism, especially if that's the title of the article. Raging Ego gets a little...
It's not the title of the thing. It's actually Matt and 117 of Ironic Commando Nerdcore Reviews, who does Nerdcore Reviews. And I was like, hey, tear apart my album. And they were like, yeah. So I actually appreciate, Schaefer, that you like spent so much time like kind of like listening to it, and, you know, spent time with it, and, you know, analyzed it, and like, you know, looked at the themes of it, because I always appreciate when people do that, because, you know, message is important. I think lyrics are one of the most important things in hip hop, and that's funny, like you pick out things that I don't necessarily even notice, you know. Really, I just kind of write what I'm inspired to write. And obviously, because it's me, the same themes kind of, you know, rear their heads up a little bit.
Oh,
like,
sure.
You know, similar yeah. themes and mistakes in Artist Anthem, even though they sound completely different. Mm. But at the same time...
Themes in, I mean, and even like... Curse of Creativity
yeah.
references the L word.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
In, like, explicitly references it.
Yeah.
Which is, I think is great.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's totally fucking cheeseball, but I still did it because I don't give a shit. I just write what I write. You
That's
know?
What I love. I loved Cobra Kai.
Thank you.
So, totally cheeseball. I'm into it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even think that's that cheesy.
Oh, you just referenced something that you said early in the podcast. So, you know, like, we have the same penchant of referencing.
Do it. High five.
Did
and
you hear that?
That's called a Good. Callback.
Fuck yeah.
So now that it's out, looking at what it is, right, mm-hmm. and I guess having some distance from it now, mm-hmm. now that it's kind of like out of your hands and in the world.
Yeah.
What do you think, I guess, what will you take into the next album? Like, what were some of the hard-earned lessons from this that you'll apply to the next one?
Oh, wow. That's a good question and really hard to answer.
Well, of course it is. I mean, you know, it's, but like, I mean, ultimately we're talking about what it is to be an artist, right? And so,
yeah.
and you mentioned that because it's you, it's going to have similar themes, similar voice.
Yeah.
And knowing what you know now, what do you think you could have done, what you could have given yourself a break for, or what you should have been harder on yourself for?
Yeah. I'm just going to preface this by saying I mentioned this, you know, me being myself writing the same, you know, same themes coming up randomly, mm-hmm. Because there was this hilarious thing that I discovered. So I used to write a whole bunch of like text note journals in my computer and I found this trove of journals going back all the way to 2002.
Wow.
In my old computer, and I took them out and I put them all on my hard drive and I like, you know, brought it to America. Right. And then I opened one of them and it's like called the Inception Incident. And it was back in 2010 when Inception came out. And like, I was like really existential about it. It was like, oh, before Inception came out, I came out with this really deep idea of like people being able to meet each other in dreams. But then I realized that Inception came out. Now I'll never be famous. Now I'll never do anything meaningful with my life. And,
oh, dear.
You know, I'll never be successful and famous and I'll never get rich. And, you know,
wow.
I'll never make my parents happy. And, you know, maybe I should just give up on this art and this life. 2010.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And 2018, I'm still talking about the same thing. So yes, you are still going to see the same themes coming back all the time, but
sure.
It's going to be in a different way.
Of course.
You know, I want to make sure that it's not like a monotonous voice, that it's not self-indulgent, that I'm not always like, you know, boohoo crying about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's boring.
Yeah, I
so. Like, you know, I'm so done with seeing comedians always talking about their shitty like Tinder dates and shit like that. I'm
yeah.
just like, shut the fuck up. I'm not interested in hearing about your shitty sex life. It's not entertaining. And you need to joke about something else.
Sure.
But you know, monotonous stuff gets boring. So I want to, you know, I want to make sure it's always interesting. Number one, I want to learn to produce. I think that's very important.
Mm.
I want to have a lot of control over, you know, my sonic sound. I obviously have a musical background, so
right.
I can compose. I composed a lot of the songs on this album.
Sure.
Artist Anthem, Luther, Psych Major were all songs that I composed.
Uh-huh.
But because I didn't have the production skills, I outsourced the production to Michael Kill,
yeah.
Clap and Pop, people
yeah.
like that, you know, to kind of, you know, flesh it out and, you know, play the instruments on it and things mm-hmm. like that. I want to be able to, you know, do that process myself so I have more control over it because I'm very picky about the way things sound. Yeah, and I'm just like, oh, you know, like, I want this particular riff. I want this particular chord progression. I want this, you know, melody that goes on top of everything.
Yeah.
And I want to have control over that. I actually recently turned down a production scholarship that I had. I was like, you know, one of the top two finalists for in San Francisco. Because I wanted to tour and be a performer. I was like, being stuck in San Francisco for like, you know, 5 days a week or, you know, traveling in and out, you know, from uh-huh. Oakland is going to be really challenging. And also I want to tour the world and rap with people and like, you know, be able to come out to New York City and things like that.
Sure.
And so I had to put like, you know, this kind of production side on the back burner so I can, you know, pursue this performance part because that is my bread and butter. I am a performer.
Right.
And so, you know, to kind of take advantage of this like buzz band, this, you know, upward trajectory, this exponential growth that I'm experiencing right now. I wanted to do that, but at some point I want to be able to learn how to produce. I want to kind of bring in a lot of my influences into it, like nu metal. I'm a huge fan of that.
Sure.
Industrial, you know, kind of like gnarly sounds and things like that.
Schaefer, you know, loves that shit.
Yeah, yeah, that shit is great. You know, I'm a huge fan of Nine Inch Nails. I've been listening to a lot of them more. I'm gonna, like, you know, see them soon. They're coming to San Francisco, and
they're
still
alive?
Hell yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they were in one of the episodes of Twin Peaks: The Return last summer.
Huh.
Yeah. Nine Inch Nails is shit. Yeah, they're great. And yeah, I want to bring in some of that. I want to bring in like punk rock, more electronic pop. You know, I'm a huge fan of like Psy. You know.
Sure. Yeah.
Gangnam Style. Like all of his music is like super danceable, super catchy, and he's like this amazing viral pop star who just like captivates everyone whenever he performs, and I want to be like that. So I want to like bring in some of like the danceable stuff as well.
Okay. You know, so the next record that you do, I'm sure it goes well beyond nerdcore. You also have the ability to basically just point at, you could just get all of nerdcore in the room and just start pointing at people being like, you, Gespers. You, yeah. Gespers. Yeah. Because everybody wants to work with you.
Oh.
I can't really express enough how much we all geeked out about you at South by Southwest and now continue
Come on,
to.
Dude.
Everybody wants to work with you.
Wow. With
you. Yeah. You are like, you are on a meteoric rise in this small scene, and we were all very lucky to have you until you outgrow us, which is going to be like, let's say, next year.
Oh, come on.
And then we will destroy you.
Come at me, bro.
Actually, I'm not a rapper. I don't really have a horse in this race, so you do you.
I was actually going to say the second point is this album has no features because it's my debut.
Sure.
I wanted it to be all me.
Yeah, makes
next
sense.
Album is going to have a shit ton of features.
Awesome.
Because I'm actually working on a lot of songs, just like singles and like mini EPs that have features on them.
Oh,
just
awesome.
Because I've experienced this, like, you know, people are willing to work with me. People are excited about like writing songs.
Oh, they're
and,
not.
Like,
they want to. People are hungry to work with me.
Really?
Yeah.
cool. I would love to work with you, whoever is, you know, listening to this.
So if you're a hip hop rapper and you'd like to work with Lex, the Lexicon artist, shoot her an email at
alex@thelexiconartist.com.
That's alex@thelexiconartist.com.
Yep. Yeah. Shoot me an email. Let's talk. I want to listen to your stuff. I'm always like casting people. I'm always looking for people who are like good fits for like, you know, the next thing. So, you know, a lot of cool collabs coming out. I'm working on this like sick fucking posse cut that is like in the back burner right now, but who knows what's going to come of it. It's just like, yeah, cool shit.
You mentioned Psy.
Yeah.
And I love Psy, by the way.
Fuck
so,
yeah.
Are you interested in doing hip hop in your native language as well?
That's a great question. Yes, I am.
Is that something you've done or no. Something you're considering or?
It's something I'm considering.
Okay.
And it's something that's a great idea. I'm building ideas for my next record right now.
Yeah.
Like as we speak, as we're in New York City.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, you know, kind of generating all these like concepts, these ideas, and that is actually a great idea. I'm gonna incorporate Mandarin,
sure.
Which is my other native language.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many languages do you speak?
I speak two natively and two as second languages.
Okay.
Yeah, or like third languages,
sure.
Essentially. And yeah, I actually do want to do that. And I haven't had the chance to do it yet, but
okay.
I've tried. To be honest, I'm not as proficient in Mandarin as I should be. I grew up in Taipei for 16 years. And I obviously spoke Chinese for a lot of my life.
Sure.
But my level is about the level of a ninth grader in high school, because
oh,
that's
wow. okay.
about when I stopped.
Right.
And so my writing skills are not
yeah.
as proficient. So this is just like, obviously it's on the record, but, you know, it's like, you know, just so you know, this is the reason that I haven't written anything in Mandarin. A lot of people are asking me, hey, have you ever done something in Mandarin? I'm like, yes, it's in the plans, but I haven't. It's really just insecurity, you know? It's really
no,
just like,
yeah.
people are going to hear my like shitty ninth grader vocabulary. and I'm embarrassed about that, but it's like every time I go back to Taipei, as soon as I open my mouth and I'm trying to order something at a restaurant, they're
yeah.
like, oh, did you just come back from the United States? I'm like, no, I grew up here. I'm native. Come on. said. And it's frustrating not feeling like I'm American enough or Taiwanese enough, like whenever I'm in like either country, but like I'm comfortable in English and people can't tell that I'm like not native. I'm a dual citizen, but people can't tell that I didn't grow up here.
Right.
And so, you know,
I wouldn't have known if you hadn't said anything.
Not having an accent has been very beneficial to like just, you know, doing this kind of like artist stuff. I recognize that if I had had like a thick Asian accent, you know, that would have, unfortunately, it shouldn't be like this, but unfortunately, it would have reduced my credibility.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If I was rapping in English with a heavy Asian accent, it would decrease my credibility. And I'm saying this right now because people with heavy Asian accents are never seen as local Americans because there's a perpetual foreigner myth,
right?
Asian American shit. Let's do this.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
I just opened the Pandora's box. Let's do this.
They're not getting cast in a lot of roles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's true. Even Asian Americans who speak great English aren't cast in a lot of roles.
No.
They were not cast as Major Motoko Kusanagi in Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
So, you know, what can you do?
I know. We, actually, you and I commiserated over...
The Outsider.
The Outsider, that Netflix movie, and I took my opinion to Twitter, and I was accused of being racist against white people.
Shut the fuck up! Oh my fucking god! Oh my god! Oh, I am so done.
It's 2018, and people still think that's a thing.
Yeah.
God, I hate Twitter.
Which is why I don't. I so rarely ever post on there. But like, it was great, sort of like being angry at Netflix with you for a short period of time.
Yeah, yeah, and I feel that shit a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I acknowledge that because of my perfect English, I have a lot of privilege. You know,
oh, sure.
I have the background of, you know, growing up in Taipei where everyone was Asian, I didn't feel othered and I wasn't like a, you know, a minority within, you know, a place where I grew up and called home, which a lot of Asian Americans are. They're like, you know, Chinese American, but they grow up in like a white neighborhood and they're always made fun of for like, you know, bringing their lunch to school. Their Asian moms get made fun of for like, you know, doing their hair a certain way, or I don't know, you know, I didn't have to deal with any of that. And then I come over here and I like integrate imperfectly, you know, and it's like, I'm super privileged to be able to have that, and like I acknowledge that all of that has been a factor in kind of, you know, the success that I have experienced so far and will continue to experience. And I acknowledge that this opportunity is not available to a lot of people, but at the same time I also think it's really important to showcase how Asian I am, because I am. And so I want
you're like the most Asian.
I'm pretty Asian.
Like if there was like a level, you'd be like, where there's like there's green at the bottom and red at the top, like you are like super Asian right there at the top of that thing.
Crush it, Lugo.
Yeah.
You're not wrong, first of all. I am very proud of my Asian heritage in a way that Asian Americans a lot of the times are not, because they're made fun of it. A lot of the time, a lot of Chinese Americans, they're like, oh, you know, like my parents didn't teach me English because they wanted me to integrate more into, didn't teach me Chinese because they wanted me to integrate more into the society.
Yeah, that happened to me as well. I grew up in a time where it wasn't cool to be Hispanic.
And, oh, for sure.
And so I was never taught how to speak Spanish.
Yeah, and it's like really unfortunate to not have that opportunity.
Yeah.
I felt that with Korean. My mom speaks Korean, but and she tried to teach it to me, but you know, I just never.
It never stuck.
It never stuck, and I wasn't as interested in it as I should have been. So I just never learned it, and I feel bad. But I do speak two other languages, like as second languages. So you know, it's not too bad.
It's two more than me.
But anyway, it's like kind of going back to being Asian and using Mandarin, I want to showcase that a little bit more. I don't want it to be a shtick, you know? I don't want it to be like, oh, she's the a rapper that can, you know, rap in English and Mandarin. It's like, I want to be acknowledged as a great rapper in itself and not just the great Asian rapper or the great Asian female rapper. But, you know,
oh, yeah, I get
I'm a rapper, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to lead with that because...
Yeah, that's, it's not my shtick, you know? My shtick is being weird and being ridiculous and, like, saying depressing things with a smiling face and, like, jumping around on stage all the time.
Nailed it.
And also, frequently acknowledging your own awesomeness.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, that, you're right. You have to thank me. That's what you do. Your record is called Raging Ego.
Fair enough. But yeah, I also acknowledge the times that I'm like not awesome. But yeah, I frequently do think that I'm the shit. And sometimes I acknowledge when I need to turn it down. And sometimes I turn it up. Yeah, so that is my long-winded answer to have you done a song in Mandarin?
Awesome. Speaking of like future songs, do you think you will ever do a song where, or have you done a song where the beat is you beatboxing and the lyrics are you rapping?
Oh, God, this question.
Does that happen a lot?
Yes.
Don't answer it.
Both of these questions happen a lot. So, or actually three of these questions.
Well, we'll just tell people to go find your other interviews.
I've actually never answered it live, but, you know, in person, people ask me that. Like, just like in conversation. So people ask me if I've ever rapped in Mandarin. People ask me, have I ever beatboxed my own songs? People ask me, are you going to incorporate violin into your songs? For beatboxing and violin, both of the answers are the same. And let me tell you what the answer is. Maybe.
And Excellent.
I probably should, because those are shticks, you know? Those people will see that and be like, oh my God, holy shit, that is so amazing. Again, I don't want it to stick. I don't want it to stick as a shtick. But I have a love-hate relationship with both of those things because I have put them like in the past for the moment. I know that they will be really cool. I am planning to play violin on my next record. That is something that I really want to have.
Good.
Because right now the idea is kind of like circling for the next album, which is the intersection of kind of like organic and like, you know, cybernetic augmentations and enhancements and things like that. And I want to combine like digital and organic sounds that sound super, super organic. And I want to bring like a really nice violin into it. So I might play violin on my next record. I should do it live. But again, just stick, right? And so I don't want to be known as like, oh, that rapper who like is also an amazing beatboxer. Oh, that rapper who also like raps while she does things. Or that rapper who raps while she, you know, plays violin. At the same time, it's like, my relationship with beatboxing is complicated. A lot of people hear me do it and they're like, oh my God, you're so good. It's so much better than your rapping. I'm like, shut the fuck up. And it makes me so angry. I'm just like, I know.
It's kind of horrible.
It makes me really upset when people say that. I'm just like, okay, I know that I'm good at it, but I'm trying to be a rapper right now. That is my main part of the project, you know? It's like, I don't want it to outshine my rapping. And
I don't think it will, because you wouldn't let it.
I wouldn't let it. And also, you know, people need to dig into the beatboxing scene more and realize that I'm really not that good. There are a lot of people who are way better than I am.
Yeah, but they don't know that. Let them think you're the greatest beatboxer.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I want them to think I'm a better rapper than I am a beatboxer. Well, although I'm good at both of those things. It's all insecurities.
Those are not mutually exclusive. Okay. You can be good at both.
Look, all of the
this got really intense.
All of the Beatles, except for George Harrison, were pretty bad musicians.
Yeah.
Excellent songwriters, but they're like really clumsy guitarists and bassists and drummers and piano players.
Okay.
Really clumsy.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, there were probably more like proficient guitarists and bassists and pianists playing at the same time they were.
Yeah.
But they just didn't do what they did. I fucking hate myself. I don't even know why I invoked the Beatles.
I
think he's trying to say that I'm going to be the nerdcore Beatles. That's it.
I
you heard it here, folks, on the Epic Podcast. Mm-hmm. Nerdcore Beatles.
That'd be great.
I have one quick question that's not about anything, and hopefully this one you haven't been asked before.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did your mom snoop on your laptop?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
For those of you who aren't clued in, the line is, my game is like my laptop, peep it like my mom. I have this compulsive reaction to, like, hide my screen from anyone who's, like, looking at it from the back, because...
Same.
When I lived in Taiwan, I would, like, face away from the door, and my mom would never knock, and she would sneak in while I was, like, looking at, like, online forums. And, like, I didn't want her to see that, and I was, like... and this is to you, Mom, too. You'll probably listen to this. I did hide a lot of stuff from you, and it was a lot of times I had to. And it was just like, I know we didn't have like the most beneficial or the most positive of relationships, but it's a lot better now. And I'm opening to you a lot more. So, you know, and I'm opening up in general, to a lot of people. I'm gonna stop this right now.
So, Lex's mom, if you'd like to write us a letter to tell us how disappointed you are in your daughter, Lex, please shoot us an email at epicpodcast@gmail.com.
That's epicpodcast@gmail.com.
Sweet.
All right, Lex. So I think we're about to wrap up here.
Okay.
I wanted to thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us today.
Thank you guys. This was fucking great. I had such a good time.
Oh, so yeah. where can people find your album and how can they get it?
Raging Ego was released on June 6th. It is on all digital channels that your heart desires. If you prefer Bandcamp, it is on the Lexicon Artist. .bandcamp.com. Mm-hmm. You can get a digital version there, or you could get one of these sleek USBs.
Sweet.
That actually contain really cool things like photos, artwork, and personalized essays that I wrote about each song. Really long essays, like very long rambling things. And you can find out more about each song.
Nice.
On the USB, and I will mail that to you. So that is all on my Bandcamp, but it's also going to be on SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon, wherever you prefer to listen to things. It'll also be on YouTube. I'm going to come up with a whole bunch of music videos in the later half of the year. You'll be able to find those on there too. And as far as social media, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Lex the Con Artist, which is L-E-X-T-H-E Con Artist. And you can find me on Facebook as Lex the Lexicon Artist, and you can find me on YouTube as Lex the Lexicon Artist. I think I covered everything. Thank you.
Lex the Lexicon Artist, thank you so much for speaking with us this month.
Thank you.
Once again, we would like to thank Lex the Lexicon Artist for being with us on the program this month.
What a delight.
Please go get Raging Ego yesterday.
Yes, please do. Give her all of your money dollars. And support her on all of the social medias. Give her the clicks, the likes, the views.
Get
the
in on
shares.
The ground floor.
That's right. Get on the ground floor.
Because this space shuttle has taken off.
Yeah. Like to experience her art is cheap right now. You're only going to, it's only going to go up from there.
Bye, bye, bye.
I saw her when I could get a ticket for $15.
That's it. Let's get out of here. You have anything to plug, my four-eyed friend?
You know what? All of June is me just getting ready for July. So I'll save my plugs for the end of the month.
Okay.
There will be a June episode. This one's airing late, but there will be a June episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, in case you haven't noticed, this episode is late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, all 12 listeners.
You would have had to wait a month for a canned... like a vaulted interview with Lex.
Right.
Now you get it on time because you had to wait a week. You could have listened to a week. We could have gone on more about Solo.
I suppose we could have.
In fact, we should start a sub-podcast where we just talk about Solo.
Is it called Soloing?
We're going to get it on the ground floor of that, too. The first month, weekly...
Shape of the Dark Lord and Nelson Lugo, their finger on the pulse of what is hot with the youths in America. The only thing I have going on is my monthly variety show called Industry Night, which will be on the 14th of June at the Red Room, which is the speakeasy bar that is above the bar called KGB, which is of itself above a black box theater called the Crane Theater. The tickets are a suggested donation of $20, so you could pay as much or as little as you like, and I guarantee you will get what you paid for.
That's a qualified tagline for your show.
It's gonna be great. We got magicians, we got burlesque performers,
yeah,
we got comedians.
Yeah, I got that.
We got a veritable cornucopia.
Do you have any animal acts?
Entertainment.
Do you have any animal acts?
I'm allergic to animals.
Then you don't.
Yeah.
In the interest of your own safety.
I don't have any.
We're done.
We're done. And this has been episode 61 of the Epic Podcast. I have been your host, Nelson Lugo.
I have been your other host, Shape of the Dark Lord.
Be safe, internets.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Epic Podcast. We'd love to listen to you, too. So send us your feedback, questions, love mail, hate mail, recipes, and fan fiction to epicpiecast@gmail.com.
As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network. And there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review us on iTunes. Like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and the Epic Podcast on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.